Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for July 1st, 2011.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society. They ended up eating more total calories and gaining more weight and being fatter than animals that always got the high-calorie chips.
The amount of theta activity you have before you get cued actually predicts whether or not that cue will help remind you of something from the past.
We take one mature cell type and convert it into another mature cell type.
This week, we'll tell you how scientists are turning skin cells into brain cells and using waste heat to cool cars. Also, researchers have identified a gene that acts as a master regulator for fat. But first, Suzanne Bard investigates the downside of fake fats.
Artificial sweeteners and fat substitutes sound like a great idea. The thinking goes like this. Eating lower calorie foods that taste like the real thing should keep us from gaining weight. But a few years ago, Purdue University researchers showed that artificial sweeteners actually cause rats to gain weight. Now a new Purdue study, led by behavioral neuroscientist Susan Swithers, suggests that fake fats can also lead to weight gain. She and her colleagues fed one group of rats regular potato chips, and another group received both the regular chips and a fat-free version.
They ended up eating more total calories and gaining more weight and being fatter than animals that always got the high-calorie chips.
She says the effect only held up for rats that were fed chips in addition to a high-fat rat chow.
So if we kept animals on a low-fat diet and gave them the chips with the fat substitute, they didn't gain extra weight. So what we think is happening is that they are unable to use the cues from the fat to predict what's going to happen. And so if the rest of their diet is fatty, they overeat. But if the rest of their diet isn't fatty, they don't overeat.
The study suggests that eating substitutes for high-calorie foods may have unintended consequences.
It may interfere with one of the normal unconscious mechanisms that our bodies use to regulate food intake. One way that food intake could be regulated is that people taste something sweet, taste something fatty, and their previous history has told them to expect that a certain number of calories are going to follow. If that doesn't happen, then they could end up overeating.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Many stories about obesity and diabetes-related genes have made the news in recent years. Scientists recently made headlines with a report on a gene called KLF14 found in fat tissue. It was already linked to cholesterol and type 2 diabetes. But it turns out that it's a master regulator that affects many other genes, including ones associated with obesity, blood sugar control, and other metabolic issues. Oxford University geneticist Mark McCarthy says the discovery may help explain how conditions like obesity and diabetes relate.
Exactly what connects obesity and abnormalities in fat to the processes in muscle and liver and in pancreas that are important for developing diabetes is not very well understood.
Of course, other factors such as diet can cause these problems, but McCarthy's team's research suggests a genetic link that deserves further exploration and could lead to more effective therapies. Next, one of the frontiers of modern medicine is cellular reprogramming, turning cells from one type that's easily harvested into another that's in short supply. Suzanne reports on a big step forward in the field.
For years, scientists have been developing ways to make human cells to order. For example, to create healthy neurons for patients with Parkinson's disease. So far, that's involved either harvesting stem cells, which can mature into any cell type, or reprogramming other kinds of cells into an embryonic form. Now, two teams of scientists have turned human skin cells directly into neurons. One of the teams was led by neurobiologist Mohlin Palmer of Lund University in Sweden. They did it by activating just three genes inside the skin cell.
We take one mature cell type and convert it into another mature cell type, and we think that this then might be a safer source of cells to use in the clinic.
Safer because embryonic cells can generate tumors. The technique also avoids the ethical issues that are associated with fetal stem cells. Palmer thinks that other cells besides skin could be changed in a similar way.
Thanks, Suzanne. If you've ever spent half an hour looking in vain for your car keys, only to remember where you left them later on while you're in the shower, scientists may finally have an explanation. Neuroscientist Shuren Ranganath and his colleagues at the University of California at Davis monitored volunteers' brain activity as they took a memory test. They found that a particular type of brainwave called theta set the stage for better recall.
The amount of theta activity you have before you get cued actually predicts whether or not that cue will help remind you of something from the past. And not just whether it'll remind you, but whether it'll help you retrieve not only something about that item, but also the context in which you studied it. So some details about where and when it happened.
That's in contrast to traditional memory research, which has looked at how different external cues trigger certain kinds of brain activity. This study suggests it also works the other way around, that certain cyclical, spontaneous brain states put us in an ideal frame of mind to remember things. Incandescent light bulbs are inefficient because most of their energy comes out as heat, not light. There's a similar problem in many other technological systems, from cars to factories. In today's final story, Suzanne tells us about efforts to put that waste heat back to work.
When your car's engine burns gas, only a fraction of the resulting energy actually makes the car go. The rest dissipates, mainly as heat from the radiator and tailpipe. Now, Oregon State University mechanical engineer Haile Wong and his colleagues have built a cooling system that runs on this sort of waste heat. Their prototype can convert 80% of the energy from wasted heat into cooling capability.
And that power could potentially also convert to electricity by attaching a generator.
Wong says the cooling system could be used not only for air conditioning, but also to cool a car's onboard electronics so they run faster and more efficiently. Heat-generated electricity, on the other hand, could be used to charge the car's batteries. And the technology could be transferred to other industrial processes, which have a similar problem with wasted energy.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, new underwater measurement tools have uncovered a previously undetected element of dolphin echolocation. And a new phone app identifies trees from photographs of their leaves. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition, every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.